Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to Mazda's focus to ensure every element of a car is designed around the driver. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. In less than 8 months, census takers will be fanning out across the country for this crucial and constitutionally mandated headcount. It happens once every 10 years. The stakes are high for communities across the country because the count determines congressional apportionment, among other things. And here to talk about those stakes is Stacy Carless, the executive director of the NC Counts Coalition, which is working to ensure a fair, accurate count in North Carolina. She joins us from Lake Lure this morning. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. For much of the last year, the Trump administration worked hard to include a citizenship question on the 2020 census. Such a question would have intimidated millions of people and most likely resulted in a diminished count. Census Bureau researchers estimated as many as 9 million people, especially those in the Hispanic community, would have steered clear of participating. Well, the United States Supreme Court later decided the question could not be included, but many believe the damage has already been done. To that end, the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials has gotten involved, and in North Carolina, they are working with NC Counts Coalition to encourage Latino participation. Juliana Cabrales is the Mid-Atlantic Director of Civic Engagement for that group, and she is also with us this morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do it at charlottetalks@wfae.org. That's email, or search for WFAE on Facebook, or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. So, Stacy, let me start with you. The census, as I mentioned, is constitutionally mandated to be conducted every 10 years. 2020 is that year. But this is a federal function. So why are your two organizations involved? Do we need the North Carolina Counts Coalition to assist?
Sure, definitely. So, it was realized a few years ago that the census has been drastically underfunded for a significant period of time compared to previous census cycles. As well as in the past, you know, it wasn't unusual for nonprofit organizations and trusted voices within communities to work with the Census Bureau to ensure a complete and accurate count. But this year, it was needed even more so because of the significant cut in funding. Hmm. And just for example, the U.S. Census Bureau wasn't able to actually ramp up their employment process until probably early this year, even with partnership specialists. And so the NC Counts Coalition was, you know, brought into fruition by a group of philanthropy organizations who saw this as a need to assist in this complete and accurate count. So what we do is we kind of try to help fill in some of the gaps with education and outreach to really make sure that folks are aware of how the new census operation will work, and to also make sure that we have real trusted messengers on the ground who can mobilize for maximum participation.
And Juliana, would your organization, the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, have been involved in this effort had it not been concerned over that citizenship question?
Yes, we actually started engaging in Census 2020 efforts in late 2016. And so before the Secretary of Commerce even announced that he was going to attempt to add a citizenship question, as an organization, we focus on getting Latinos to participate in the American political process. And the census, of course, is a big component of that work.
Remind us, I'm not sure which one of you to talk about, but maybe Stacy, remind us of what's at stake here in terms of getting an accurate count. What hangs in the balance?
Sure. So we always say it's about the money and the power. So for North Carolina, we are actually expected to pick up a congressional seat, and we should have picked up a congressional seat in 2010. And we missed that by a small margin. I can't remember the exact number, but it could have, we always say it could have been done, for example, if every child had been counted. So one is our political power. Two, the federal government distributes about $800 billion a year from census-guided funding. And North Carolina currently receives about $16.3 billion a year. And these are funds for like your social welfare programs, education, healthcare programs. And that's, you know, per capita, that's about $1,600 per person. So these are the dollars and cents that's flowing into our communities for healthcare, education, as well as for infrastructure with transportation. And then third, what's most important is probably the community planning aspect. So when our community leaders are looking at where to place schools and libraries and parks and where to put in the infrastructure, they look to see where people are. So if individuals are not counted, they technically are invisible.
So if this were an election and not a census, would this be considered a tight race?
I would say so, definitely.
Okay. Juliana, for months, the Trump administration, as I said, tried to put a citizenship question on the census. That question would have asked, quote, are you a citizen of the United States? It would not have been the first time that question or a question like it was on the census. I think one appeared in the early 20th century. What made it such a touchy subject this time?
Yeah, so the last time the Census Bureau did anything similar was in 1950, prior to the enactment of the Voting Rights Act. In the 1950 form sent to every household in the nation, the Bureau asked for the citizenship status of foreign-born residents. So it was very specific in who had to respond to that question.
Did it instill fear in people back in the 1950s when that question was on the census?
It's hard for me to know historically what the impact was, but what we know is that the question was unnecessary. It's important to know that the American Community Survey, which goes to the field, does have a citizenship question on it, but that goes to a smaller segment of the population. Since we heard that the Secretary of Commerce was attempted to add this question in late March of last year, we started to hear from community members, community leaders, Latino organizations across North Carolina, that there was big concerns and that it would negatively impact the participation of Latinos in the 2020 census.
Was it the Trump administration's, had the question been allowed to stand and be on the census, was it their intention to not count or not give money to the states for the people who are not citizens? Does that make sense?
Yeah, so what we found, once the question was added, lawsuits started to pop up across the country. And litigation throughout the case helped uncover evidence that Secretary Ross wanted the citizenship question included in the census before the Department of Justice actually made the request. And in addition to that, it was added, evidence uncovered showed that it was added to discriminate against Latinos and other non-whites. There was a consultant that actually was based in North Carolina who passed away, and his files were uncovered, and they showed that the intention might have been to affect the redistricting process in the state.
As I understand it, Stacey, you don't put your name. I filled out several censuses, if that's the right word, in my life. I don't recall putting my name on it. Is that the case? You don't put your name on the census. Is that right?
No, you do put your name on the census.
You do?
Yes.
Okay, so that brings up all sorts of questions. Why would I answer questions honestly if my name is on the survey? Why? I would be inclined not to be completely honest, depending upon the question, of course.
Right. But the thing is, you have to answer every question, right? Or you're supposed to answer every question.
Uh-huh.
It's 10 questions, typical name, age, you know, where you're residing, marital status. Technically, if you miss a few questions, the form might still go through without your name. But somebody might come on your door and knock and, you know, ask you for the missing information. So it's all self-reported. And it's how you decide to report yourself to the government for the census. I could certainly understand. And I think that's one of the issues is a lot of folks wonder, you know, why is the government in my business? Why are they in my house? Why do they want to know who I am, where I am, and how many people live here? But there are laws that regulate the information to make sure that it could only be utilized for, you know, the federal funding programs for...
I'm glad you brought that up. Essentially, there's a law that says the Census Bureau cannot share responses with other federal agencies, including ICE, that would identify individuals. And the period of time that it prohibits the dissemination of that information is 72 years after it is collected, which means that next year, in 2020, the data from, I guess, 1948... If there was an interim census, that then the data from that could be released. So I guess it would be not 2020 what? 1952 before you could get the data from the 1950 census. Is that right?
Right.
So does the knowledge of that, Juliana, remove some of the fear in the Latino community, or are they distrustful that the government will follow its own rules?
Well, without a doubt, the fact that there won't be a citizenship question next year is a huge relief for the community. As an organization, though, we're still working closely with community leaders and organizations to make sure that they understand the importance of participating. When we talk to community members, and we've done some communications and messaging research around it, the most effective way to convince folks to participate is to link it to the impact it has in their communities. So Stacey's points earlier, how it affects schools being built, healthcare programs in your communities. The way we're approaching whether folks complete the census questionnaire or not, first of all, it's constitutionally mandated, so everyone should participate. And we're encouraging individuals to self-respond, because if you self-respond, you avoid falling into the non-response follow-up category, which is when someone will come knocking on your door to gather the information you haven't submitted.
Okay. So we've talked about what's at stake here. I would imagine, it's not just putting another seat in Congress for North Carolina, giving us another congressperson. It is also going to control, I believe, how the legislative and congressional districts will be drawn going forward. And they're in place for 10 years until the 2030 census. It also has to deal with money. How much more money do we stand to gain, given our population increase, if everybody accurately reports on this census, Stacey?
So the way that they look at it is you could put it at about $1,600 per person. So I don't have the exact number as to how much North Carolina could gain. But if we aren't counted, what happens is that share of the $800 million more just goes towards other states, basically.
So that's $16,000 per person over 10 years if we fail to count that person in the census. This is more than a head count. What other information will be on the questionnaire?
So it will have your race and ethnicity. That question will be on there. Your age, your date of birth, your name, your residence.
And who uses this information once it's collected, aside from just the broad number, okay, North Carolina has X number of citizens, therefore they get X number of congresspeople, they get X number of dollars. Who uses this information? Of what good is it to the country?
Sure. So it's really good for businesses. A lot of corporations, when they're looking to relocate, they're looking at this data to see, what the demographics are. As well as it's used a lot. I can't stress this enough. I used to work in government. It's used a lot for transportation. When we're talking about transportation funds, grants, going from your actual roads all the way down to your transit systems, these federal funds, when government goes back and your local government might ask for grant funding for XYZ service, transit service in your neighborhood. They go back to the census to look at, what the 10-year growth is and where people are and where they're expected to be.
We will talk more about the census, the 2020 census, which will be taken next April, in a moment here with Stacey Carlos, who joins us this morning by Skype, Executive Director of NC Counts Coalition, and Juliana Cabrales. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the 2020 census, which is rolling out next April, but people need to get ready for it. Stacey Carlos is with us via Skype. She's the executive director of NC Counts Coalition. Juliana Cabrales is the Mid-Atlantic director of civic engagement for the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials Educational Fund. And there was a lot of worry in the Latino community, as we all know, about the census because of ICE and the Trump administration's approach to undocumented immigrants. Given the fear and the personal stakes involved, Juliana, among many in the Latino community, despite the lack of a question asking, are you a citizen, what are you saying to them to convince them to participate?
Yeah, Yeah, so I think we're sharing several messages with the community. One, if there is fear about ICE agents at our doors, right, ICE agents in our community, we heard yesterday about a massive raid that happened in Mississippi, and we know these things, as they continue to happen, continue to grow the fear that's in our community. So on the piece about combating concerns or misinformation efforts regarding ICE agents, what we're doing is really encouraging community members to avoid the Census Bureau having to contact them in person or by telephone. And the best way to do that is to self-respond. As we know, due to the significant cuts in funding, the Bureau is having has implemented the online response option for 2020. It will actually be the first time a majority of us will be asked to complete the census questionnaire online. So apart from the online option, community members will also be able to call in and self-respond or request a paper form to their house and complete that out. So our message to community members that might be concerned about individuals coming to their doors during the non-response follow-up, that's our message. Go ahead and self-respond early on in the process, and that way you will avoid having the Census Bureau at your door.
So let's talk about the process, Stacey, because as Juliana just mentioned, this is the first time that we'll be able to take this online. Is that the preferred number one method that the government is hoping we choose? Stacey? Are you there, Stacey?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can now. Go ahead.
Yes. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. So the preferred method is online for the government. You know, there'll be three options. You could either do it, you'll get an invitation in the mail to respond. You could do it online, by phone, or you could call the U.S.
Stacey, hold on. You're breaking up. You're on Skype. Is that right?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Stay still and speak to us. Don't walk around. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So there's three ways that you could take the census. It will be online, or you could call them and ask them to mail you in a form, as well as you could call and take it over the phone. The government is hoping that most response is online for some of North Carolina, because about 24% does not have broadband access.
If you don't have a computer, what are you supposed to do? Take it on the phone or fill out a questionnaire on paper? What are you supposed to do? And what if you're homeless and don't have access to any of that?
Sure. So for the homeless population, the census will actually go out about 3 days prior to the count to places where our homeless population typically might receive services. So they'll go to some of the shelters and they will take those questions in person with an enumerator. Now, for other individuals who may not have online access, of course, they'll, you know, either if the Census Bureau identifies that address as being less likely to have internet access, they will provide them with an invitation as well as a questionnaire so they could do it the typical way. However, you know, other folks, what they might have to do, let's say, you know, they're in a community where they have online access, but they don't have a computer, or they don't have a phone, or, you know, like a cell phone. What we're trying to do is some education and outreach with maybe like some libraries and some other folks where folks, other places where folks would typically receive services so that they could participate in the census there. So a lot of it's going to go back to education and
So given what we know about Russian hacking of our last election and the concern about Russians and other actors getting into our, and I don't mean theater actors, I mean bad actors getting into our computer systems, why are we doing this online? Couldn't the census be hacked?
That is an excellent question, and that is one of our concerns, considering the drastic cut in funding is, you know, has it been tested, and is the government making sure that this information is, in fact, secure and safe, because that is of utmost importance to maintain the integrity of the census. So, no guarantee, of course. You know, and this is why we encourage folks, if you don't feel comfortable to do it online, there are other options. And we want to make sure that we're very clear about that and that we make sure that folks understand that that should not be a barrier to participation.
Juliana, you say that in 2010, the census may have missed as many as 9,500 Latino children in North Carolina. Why did that happen? And what was the impact of that?
Yeah, so research conducted after the 2010 census shows that the largest age group that was undercounted was children ages 0 to 4, a big portion of that being Latino children. It's hard for us to know exactly why individuals that completed the census questionnaire did not include their children, but this is one of the barriers we're facing ahead of 2020. There needs to be a lot of education, a lot of outreach done to families with young children and make sure that they realize that when they complete the census questionnaire, children ages 0 to 4 should be included. When we look back at data in 2010, we found that families did fill out their census questionnaire, but for a reason we don't know or it's hard to understand, they left out their young children.
It is also, I'm not sure where I read this, but it is said that it will be Latino children, the presence of Latino children appearing on the census in North Carolina in 2020 that will make the difference in the 2020 count. So given we've talked about being at stake here, which is another congressional representative in Congress and more money coming into the state from the federal government, it is important that Latino children are counted, correct?
Yes, no doubt about it. We know that, you know, the population growth in North Carolina in part is due to the growth of the Latino community. And the Latino community in North Carolina is very young. And so we want to make sure young Latinos are included because for the point Stacey outlined, it has a big impact in the bottom line, money and power in our state.
We are months away from what is called Census Day, which is April 1st. What does that mean, that Census Day is April 1st? Are we all going to get on our computers on April 1st and fill out the census form? Is that the plan, Stacey?
Yeah, so the invitations will actually start going out the week of March 23rd, so about a week before April 1st. And once individuals start receiving that invitation, they can begin filling out, going online or calling in for a questionnaire, that invitation in the mail. However, the big Super Bowl day, just for reference, is April 1st. So you'll probably see more promotion going on around the census as well as kickoff events to celebrate the census on that day.
Will the servers be able to handle all the traffic if everybody files their census questionnaire online on April the 1st? Okay, I think we've lost Stacey again.
Yeah,
Stacey,
can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I'm in a very odd position in the room. We hope that it doesn't crash. But you know, we'll be prepared either way because this only happens every 10 years, and we want to make sure that North Carolina has the most accurate count.
And how confident are you that that will actually happen?
I'm not as confident as I probably could be had there been full funding and stronger policy in place to support the census. But I am confident in our state pulling together. 88% of our counties have established complete count committees. And even if there's no funding, they have, you know, the governor has made this a priority for our state, which is also encouraging. So I would say I'm probably a little bit more confident than other states on what North Carolina can do.
Stacey Carlos is the executive director of NC Counts Coalition. Juliana Cabrales is the Mid-Atlantic director of civic engagement for the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials Educational Fund. I want to leave you with this thought. We have an email from Kate who says, as an amateur genealogist, I can tell you I'd be missing lots of ancestors on my family tree if people did not put their names on the census. Who would have thought of that? Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.